Without further delay, it is our honor to invite Sheikh Kazim Bojani from India. He is going to be, he's going to be addressing the believers tonight, talking about Hizbullah as a social movement. We invite him with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-aliyy al-azim. A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. وبارئ الخلائق اجمعين وباعث الانبياء والمرسلين ثم الصلاة والسلام على اشرف الانبياء والمرسلين حبيب اله العالمين ابي القاسم المصطفى محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى اله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقيه الله في الارضين اما بعد I begin by offering my felicitations to you all on the blessed occasion of the Milad and the birth of Bibi Zainab Salamullah Alayha. One of the ways that we connect with these divine great personalities, the likes of Bibi Zainab Salamullah Alayha, is that we look at her conduct, her seerah, her path, the values she stood for. We take her as a role model and inshallah we try and emulate her in our lives. And coincidentally, the topic which inshallah we are going to discuss today, which is going to be Hizbullah as a social movement, you can relate it to Sayyida Zainab Salamullah Alayha in the sense that she was one of the key initiators and pioneers of the most important and the greatest Islamic social movement we have, the movement of Karbala. So we can definitely make that connection, and certainly Hizbullah draws a lot of inspiration from Karbala, from this movement, and it's very clear from all the things that they do and they say. But of course we know that the movement of Karbala is different in certain ways to other social movements. It's kind of that grand social movement in a manner that is so grand that you do not have something like that repeating again. It's that ultimate battle between truth and falsehood, haq and batil. And in fact, all other social movements led by the believers, the Shias, they kind of take inspiration from this grand historical movement of Karbala, and Bibi Zainab Salamullah Alayha had a very prominent role to play in that. And Hizbullah is no exception, and they are following the footsteps of Bibi Zainab Salamullah Alayha, of Imam Hussein Alayhi Salam. And inshallah, that is the topic that we want to speak about tonight, inshallah. We all know and we are all aware that we are passing through very sensitive times. The events that are happening, what's going on, especially in the Western Asia, as they call it, Middle East. These events are so significant that they're going to shape the entire region for a very, very long period of time. And possibly also, it's going to significantly change a global balance of power. Okay? And usually this is how it is, that when you're going through these significant events, you don't realize how significant they are. It's usually after these events finish and complete and the effects start showing itself, is when you realize that these are very, very significant moments in history. Again, you can take many examples, like people who were present during the world wars. Probably they did not realize how significant these wars are and these changes are, and we all know that end of the Second World War was creation of a new global order shaped by what happened on the battlefield during these wars that were happening. And of course, and we really know this, and that this is a very significant moment. Leader of the Revolution has mentioned this several times, just to mention one of the things that he mentioned several months ago when the Lebanese speaker came to visit him, Nabih Birri. He made a statement saying that the situation is sensitive right now, both for our side, the axis of resistance, and both for the other side. It's a question of life and death. So we all should be a bit also like alert, concerned, that these are very, very significant happenings that we are going through. Inshallah, maybe we can have some role to play in that. Naturally, when these events happen, a lot of interest is sparked. So, for example, Hezbollah is in the headlines, and people are asking, who are these people? What is this movement? Our interest also as believers has always been with Hezbollah, but we also have a renewed interest in Hezbollah, trying to see what's going around. But at times I feel that this interest at times is a bit shallow, in the sense that an event happens and that triggers our attention, and we pay attention to what's happening. And of course, there is that emotional component, and that's very important. But it stays at that, and that energy and that attention that was created, it fizzles out. It's not there any longer. Whilst these events could have been a very good opportunity to spark discussions, have many sessions, many seminars, many classes, many different types of events, trying to understand what, for example, Hezbollah is. Okay, so let's try and do that very briefly. Again, my time is going to be very limited. I need to keep an eye on my watch. Fortunately, there's no watch in front of me. So, because many places where you go and you speak, they keep like 2-3 watches in your eyesight, kind of telling you that you better keep your time. But inshallah, I will keep time. So let's talk about Hezbollah as a social movement. But before I do that, there's a few introductory comments I want to make very quickly so that we can speak about this topic. The first thing is that certainly Hezbollah is not something that can be discussed in 30 or 45 minutes. You need longer time. And at times people have this expectation that there is this topic, you give me bite-sized information. I don't have time. I have 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, Instagram, 1 minute. You have to tell me everything about it. That's not possible. Yes, there is a type of content suitable for that format, but if you want a serious understanding of Hezbollah at a very introductory level, just an overview of what actually they're doing, probably you might need like an 8 to 10 hour course where you actually go through the basic details of what they have done, a bit of their history and thing, and a part of it, inshallah, we'll try and do tonight. So that's first comment. Second thing is that I feel that at times, even ourselves, and many of the believers, their understanding of Hezbollah is based on that gut feeling, that, as I would say, a street experience. There's no reading, there is no classes, there's no that kind of an academic approach where you say that, okay, let's go and see what they did. Rather, it's a combination of some information we have about them, some of the great personalities, shuhada, that we know about them, and we form like a very basic understanding of what Hezbollah is, for example. That, I personally feel, creates a very flawed understanding at times. And I just want to give two very quick examples. So, for example, people come and visit Iran. Iran is a country and a lot goes on in this society. Many times they base their perception about the entire society based on their street experience. Right, and many times we have bad street experiences, right? Taxi drivers, for example, you go. Or you go to some of the offices, you face problems, and we all know that these things are there. But using that limited data, your own first-hand experience that's quite limited, to generalize and say that, okay, the Iranian society is like this, that leads to very inaccurate conclusions. The flip side also holds true. People go and visit some of these Western countries. They go to, for example, United States. Just as an example, and let's say someone goes to a very elite university in the United States, like Harvard University, okay? And they spend most of their time there, right? And their perception of United States as a society is shaped by their limited experience in the university. And their university experience might be very pleasant. Why? Because they're big universities, it's all green, they're very nice and refined outwardly, like akhlaq, they talk to you very well, and you see the organization. You might end up thinking that the entire American society is what you're experiencing, whilst we all know that this is a flawed understanding. So we need to take a bit the harder approach, because there are no shortcuts to knowing these things. It has to be based on data, a lot of facts, a lot of reading, at times even experience. So for example, if you really truly want to experience Hezbollah as a social movement, probably a component of that would be you have to go and stay there for a bit. You need to experience and see that thing functioning itself and see it from close. So all these things need to be added. And in addition to that, definitely you need a lot of thinking, analysis, trying to understand what actually they're doing. So that's the second point. I'm still in my introduction. And the third and the last introductory point that I would like to make is that at times, it's kind of a bit difficult to have an unbiased understanding of some of these things, including Hezbollah. What do I mean? Like, certainly we are not going to be biased in the sense that we're going to have a negative picture of Hezbollah. We all of us hold Hezbollah in a very positive light. What I'm trying to say is that at times we might have certain presupposed ideas about how an Islamic movement should be, okay? And then I have not read a lot about what actually Hezbollah is doing on ground. I don't have time, I don't have that energy to go and read about these things. Naturally, what I might end up doing is that I might project my ideas onto Hezbollah and kind of impose upon them and put make a picture in my mind that, okay, Hezbollah must be like this. So basically, it's like a logical reasoning. I don't know what they're doing on ground because I have not read about it. I have some ideas of my own regarding how an Islamic movement should be. Hezbollah is an Islamic movement, so they must be doing this. Whilst in many places, and I'll give some examples, you see that Hezbollah has taken a very unusual approach. Again, quote-unquote, unusual for us. For them, it was very usual. For them, it was the best thing to do. But maybe my perception would drastically change if I find out that, oh, in this matter, this is how they did. So, and again, this we all know that being very fair and unbiased in a perception and analysis is not an easy thing, right? It's justice with your own self. And that's why the Holy Quran emphasizes this idea. It says, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, kunu kawwamina bilqist, shuhada'a lillahi walau ala anfusikum. That we have to be maintaining justice at all times, that a very fair perception in all aspects of our life, and including the aspect where we want to understand different things, we need to have a very unbiased, basically you need to clear your mind of all presupposed ideas. Of course, you can't do that fully, but as much as possible, and see and look what they're doing. Okay. So what is Hezbollah? Friends and foes have different answers, right? I mean, everyone wants to know what it is. So some of them would call it militia, some would call armed resistance, it's a political party. They've also described Hezbollah as a state within the state, which is true in some ways. Okay. Probably the term or the word that would capture Hezbollah in its entirety in a good way would be to say that Hezbollah is an Islamic social movement. Okay. Very simply. And again, not going into any technicalities of what social movements are and things. And there's a lot of work on that. There's a lot of research that happens both in the Western world, on our side, thinking about this idea of having social movements. And especially the ones we are interested in is the social movements guided by Islam. And if you really see Hezbollah as a social movement, what they have achieved in 40 years, roughly that's the time frame they have got, right? What they have achieved is absolutely remarkable. Given the odds they were facing, the problems they had a brutal enemy just besides them. With all the odds, what they have built as a social movement, I'm going to describe a bit of it today, is absolutely magnificent. And you've seen that continuously, Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the revolution, is reminding us that, look, Hezbollah is something very significant. And he used verses of the Quran to describe it. In one of the places, he used this verse of the Quran to describe it. مَثَلُ كَلِمَةٍ طَيِّبَةٍ كَشَجَرَةٍ طَيِّبَةٍ أَسْلُهَا ثَابِتٍ وَفَرْءُهَا فِي السَّمَاءِ. This is what Hezbollah is. It's an example of شَجَرَةٌ طَيِّبَةٍ. It's very firmly rooted. Again, it has its own meaning. What does it mean to be very firmly rooted? And the interesting part is تُؤْتِي أُكُلَهَا كُلَّ حِينٍ بِإِذْنِ رَبِّهَا. It's alive, it's well-founded, and it is going to show its fruits. And currently we are seeing it in the form of the resistance they have put up against the invading forces. And it's very interesting. One of the analysts, in his description of how much Hezbollah has been successful on the ground invasion, he mentioned that if the Israeli forces were making big successes on ground, they would have definitely announced it. The very fact that we don't have any major news coming from them except for mass destruction of villages and those things shows that it's quite a stiff situation for them. And we all know that there is a complete blackout in the Israeli media, Israeli military, and it's very hard to know what's actually going on there. But we know that they're putting up a stiff resistance. Why? Because they are a very, very strong and prominent movement. Okay. Now, to talk about Hezbollah is not easy, especially in this time frame, because there's a range of topics you can talk about. So I would say that if someone wants to get a very basic understanding of Hezbollah, they need to look at these 5 or 6 themes, again, which I'm not going to be able to cover all of them. I'm just going to very briefly speak about some of them. First is the understanding the prerequisites and the ground and the base that was present in the Shia society of Lebanon that allowed for such a movement to take shape. Because social movements don't take shape in vacuum. There has to be a base. There needs to be something there on which you build this movement. So that's one topic we need to see. The second topic is the immediate lead up to the formation of Hezbollah, 1960 to 1980. Some things happened. Some grounds were prepared leading to the formation of this movement called Hezbollah. So that's the second topic. The third topic, very important one, is the leadership of Hezbollah. Very important because, as you saw in the clip, and this is very fresh, this is just from today morning, he described Hezbollah as a legacy of Sayyid Shahid Hassan Nasrallah. So leadership, this one man, and the description was so amazing. He said his bravery, his management and planning, and he says his extraordinary patience and trust in God. So imagine at times, the leadership model we have, one person can lift a lot of load. One person can do a lot. Of course, with the help of others. It's not going to be one man show that he's going to be doing everything. Okay. So that's the third thing we need to discuss, leadership of Hezbollah. But leadership itself is not enough. And again, the leader of the revolution, Imam Khamenei, he described this. He said that what they managed to do, and the leadership managed to do, is that they institutionalized this whole movement. So creating institution is the fourth thing we need to discuss. And the fifth thing, of course, a very prominent one, is asking the question, what have they done? Show me on the ground. Because it's very easy to make big claims of doing very big things, but you have to show it. It has to be there in the society, amongst the people. It has to have that impact, because people are not going to judge you based on what you say. People are going to judge you based on what you actually have. And indeed, they have a lot to show to the world in terms of what they've built, in terms of a social movement. That's the fifth topic. The sixth topic, which again would be very interesting, is asking this question, what makes them successful? What are those key ingredients, that secret recipe that if you put it together, you can have an amazing and a fast-growing social movement like you have the one in Hezbollah. So yeah, basically, up until now, what I've managed to do is I've made some introductory comments and I've just drawn out the outline of what I wanted to speak about. And I can already see my time, half of my time has been used up. So what I'm going to do in the remainder of my time is that very briefly, I want to go through all of these, but again, in a very, very brief manner, so at least we get an idea of what actually happened. And this also tells us one other thing, is that there's a lot of detail here. There's a lot to be known. There's a lot to be read. And I would specifically refer to one of the books, and that is a book written by the current Chief Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sheikh Naim Qasim. It's translated in English. Of course, the translation is not the best of the translation, but it's doable, it's good. It's called Hezbollah, the Inside Story, if I remember the title correct. So basically, he came out and said that, look, everybody's describing us, and they're misrepresenting us. I mean, there's a very easy solution to that. Let me come and describe it for you. There's no... Okay, so it's very important that he has laid out a lot of details of who they are and what they are. And a lot of the content that I'm going to mention is actually from that book. So before I continue, help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
So let's get into the first discussion, and that is that we know that social movements don't start in a vacuum. There has to be a base. There has to be something that people who want to start this social movement can use. They need resources. And interestingly, the Lebanese society, the Lebanese Shia society, had a lot of accumulated social capital. Okay? They are not new to Shiaism. It's a very, very old Shia society. Very strong in their commitment to the madhab of Ahlul Bayt, who have faced very difficult times historically under Ottoman Empire, under different other political powers that were ruling them. And yet you have a very rich tradition of ulama and scholars coming from South Lebanon, Jabal Amin. Okay? And this is something really amazing. It's even hard to understand that with so many difficulties, with being such a minority, surrounded by different like religions and different political powers, how did they manage to retain that social capital, those values, that commitment to the path of the Ahlul Bayt? And the outstanding feature of that is the ulama and the scholars we have from Jabal Amil. So Shahid Awal is from Jabal Amil. Shahid Thani is from Jabal Amil. Muhakkik Karaki, Jabal Amil. Sheikh Bahai is from Jabal Amil. And interestingly, Rahbar made a reference to this in his Arabic speech which he gave on the Friday khutbah. Very interestingly. And he portrayed it in a way, and it's very interesting. He's saying that we are indebted to the Lebanese society for the services that the Lebanese scholars have done to us. And he mentioned 5-6 names of these prominent Lebanese scholars who came to Iran, and they did a lot of very big things in the time of Safavis, in the time of the other kingdoms that were there. So he kind of mentioned it like this, that look, we have a debt to pay you back. And therefore, don't think that our support for you is a favor we are doing. No, you have given us a lot. So that idea of solidarity came out very prominently. And this shows that the Lebanese society, in terms of the scholars they've produced, is very strong. So that lays the groundwork. Again, this itself is a topic, that what is that social capital that the Lebanese Shias are holding, that Islamic capital that they're holding on to, the scholars, the ulama of Jabal Amil, who they were, what they did. It's a story that needs to be discussed. So imagine in this context, now we go to the second point, and that is the immediate lead up to the formation of this movement called Hezbollah. Again, as I mentioned, things don't happen in vacuum. It wasn't the case that suddenly some people just gathered and say that, okay, let's start this movement called Hezbollah. 1982, they selected a date, made an announcement. No, there is an immediate buildup. So Sheikh Naeem Qasim in his book describes this immediate buildup across like 10, 15 pages. And I'm just going to very briefly summarize this. So he says that from 1960s onwards, you have these scholars. Some of them studied in Najaf, some of them in Qom, some of them Lebanese, some of them non-Lebanese, entering Lebanon and doing a lot of cultural and tarbiyati work. Okay, nothing political in that sense, nothing very overtly even to counter Zionists. They would give statements when the need would be there, because Lebanon had been under Israeli pressure from the right from 1948. It's like it's always suffered the because of the occupation around them. So he describes it very beautifully. He says that usually these scholars would go and they would gather people in the mosque and they'll teach them Islam, they would do their tarbiyah, they would speak to them, they would have different gatherings. It had more of a farhangi, cultural nature of activities. And he mentions that three personalities had a lot of impact in these. These were the three prominent ulama in Lebanon working from 1960 to 1980 that kind of prepared the grounds for Hezbollah to come and start their work. So basically they're building upon something, and that's how it is. Even Islamic Revolution of Iran, 1979, it didn't happen like in a few years. It was a built-up. There was a lot of things that happened from 1963 to 1979 that led to this. So who are these three prominent personalities? Of course, some of the names. One of the names, of course, you can guess. The first name and the most prominent one is, of course, Imam Musa Sadr. And he does a lot. He forms a council of ulama there. He gathers all the scholars. He starts Harkatul Mahrumin, economic upliftment of the Shias, because the Shia society in Lebanon was literally living in ghettos. They're the weakest in terms of their economy, their education, in all social counters. They're the suppressed and the oppressed people there. So he named his movement Harkatul Mahrumin. And then even he built a military wing, which is the Amal movement. So Amal movement was a military wing. Again, but 1978, he travels to Libya and He's abducted and no one knows what happened to him after that. Another personality is Ayatollah Muhammad Mahdi Shamsuddin. He's another prominent ulama, studied in Najaf. He goes back there. In eastern Beirut, he has a base. He has a lot of cultural activities. He has a mosque. He's doing a lot of... He was more intellectually oriented. He was more interested in doing these kind of intellectual activities. And the third and a very important personality is Sheikh Muhammad Hussein Fadlullah. Okay. So imagine, the ulama are present there. They are on ground. They are working with people. They are doing activities. They have a base. Okay. And this base is going to be very, very useful for Hezbollah to take on from that and take it to the next stage. Especially, I'm just going to quote a paragraph, what Sheikh Naim Qasim says about relationship between Sheikh Fazlullah and Hezbollah. So he says, during the early years of the party, the name of Ayatollah As-Sayyid Muhammad Hussain Fadlullah was closely associated with its own. Initially, they are seen as synonymous. He was a symbol of many ideological concepts within the party, guiding Hezbollah through a mature vision of Islam and of the Islamic movement, supporting the Islamic Revolution's leader in Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini. This prompted many to nominate him for a leading position in this nascent faction. He was offered the leadership of Hezbollah. But for his own reasons, he decided to maintain a very general presence, again, a cultural presence. He didn't want to get involved for his own reason, and that's a discussion on its own. So this is the build-up to Hezbollah. There's a lot happening in Lebanese society. The ulama, the scholars are present. They're working with the people. They're doing a lot of activities. They're trying to uplift them economically. 1979, you have Islamic Revolution, and that gave a big boost. The connection was established. Imam Khomeini ordered the Revolutionary Guards here to go and help them there. The contact was established. And the other turning point is 1982, Israeli invasion of Lebanon. Okay. So what happens there is that all these factions which are there inside Lebanon, they put up some resistance against the occupiers, but they don't manage to drive them back. And very easily, within a matter of days, you see the occupying army take over Beirut. And all the other things happen with Yasser Arafat and PLO, and that's a different story. So here, these ulama who are very concerned of what's happening there, they gather and they say that we need an organization that would represent these three visions. Again, I'm not going into details. One, Islam is a comprehensive and complete religion for all aspects of our life. This is their vision. Second, resistance is our key strategy. And the third thing is that we want to be under the leadership in Iran. Okay. So looking at that leadership and the wilayat as something that they need to go back to and refer back to and be under. Okay. So they say we need an organization that would have these three core principles embedded into it. We want to start a social movement. So nine of these scholars, they gather in Bakkawali in one of the cities and they have a conference and they come up with what they call as the manifesto of the nine. So they prepare a manifesto, these nine scholars, and this manifesto is taken to Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, and he kind of endorses it. He's saying that, yes, this looks good, go and start the thing. Okay. So this was my second discussion, the immediate build-up to the formation of Hezbollah. So you see a lot is happening there. But now you have the manifesto, you have a green light from Imam Khomeini. Now what do you do next? Like, that's not the end of the story, right? Now you have to do something. So here, these two major components come into picture. Leadership and creating institutions. And these two go hand in hand. If you have very strong leadership but no institutions, it's a failure. Okay, you can see, like, I got a confirmation. It's a failure. Why? Because the best leadership, if it doesn't have institutions to cause a social change, the leadership will be lonely. You won't be able to do anything. The best leaders we have had, the imams that we had, they didn't have institutional power, government in their hand. They couldn't do what they really wanted to do. Of course, didn't mean they're sitting and doing nothing. They're doing something else then. But if you have strong institutions, but the leadership is lacking, that can also turn into a disaster, like, very clearly, right? If you have a very good, strong institution, but the leadership is not there, it can turn into a disaster. And this is what exactly Hezbollah did. They had strong leadership, and it's really, really like, I don't know the words you use, that amazing to see the leaders they have. And again, this is the product of the Lebanese society. The Lebanese society has something that it produces these leaders. So from Shahid Raghib Harb to Shahid Abbas Musawi to, you see their prominent personalities, and I think the highlight and the star of all is, of course, Shahid Syed Hassan Nasrullah. And again, I would say this here, that as much as his personality is important, to the same level, he's been neglected. I mean, you look at the number of books written about him, I was just looking, trying to see that very few. Like, you'll find like 4 or 5 books, not complete, like very little information about him. And in one of those books, Ayatollah Khamenei wrote a note. He said that this is a very good attempt. And he said, any effort to introduce this personality to other people is something that should be done. Okay? So again, you see that leadership, and especially I would say that Syed Hassan Nasrullah's personality is something very, very unique, very exceptional in many different ways. In certain ways, he doesn't fit the regular descriptions. Right? Okay, so you have a standard way to rise up to that leadership. He doesn't fit that. Age of 33, he's the Secretary General of Hezbollah. Makes no sense, right? Like, Hezbollah is not a small thing, and 33-year-old young man leading the whole thing. Again, it's something to be studied. Again, I'm not going into that. What I want to very briefly mention, my time, I think I have a few minutes, is to speak about, they had the leadership. They had the ulama saying that, okay, we are leading this movement. What do we do now? They said that now we need to create institutions to do the work. We have the manifesto. We have the approval. Now we need to do something. So I'll read the first paragraph of what Sheikh Naeem Qasim writes about what they started to do. Research started into the practical implementation of those objectives endorsed by Imam Khomeini in the Manifesto of the Nine. Wide-ranging discussions ensued at the party leadership level, particularly in what relates to the ideal organizational setup and framework, and as to how the party's merits could serve for managing and bringing the nation together. Okay, so this was the challenge in front of them. And they had to answer very difficult questions here. One of the difficult questions they had to answer was that, are we trying to take over the Lebanese government and form an Islamic government here, like what happened in Iran, or no? And they answered, and he has a long discussion about it in the book, saying that they answered that right now, no. Very clearly, it's very interesting that the party and the senior ulama, they decided that right now in Lebanon, in our context, we are not doing that. Does that mean we are doing nothing? No, we'll create our own institutions. And that's why Hezbollah is being referred at as a state within a state. Okay? Of course, this has a political agenda behind it. This is to suppress Hezbollah, to target them, to call it a state, because it's a very negative thing in international politics, right? If you have a state, why do you have another state? Okay? But it has an element of reality to it that, yes, they started building their parallel institutions. It's a very hard question they had to discuss and answer. The second very difficult question that they had to answer was that they said that if we make an institution, a party, what if now this party itself becomes our idol and party itself becomes our goal? So this party, this institutional setup is supposed to serve as a means to serve people, right? Cause a social change. But there are many, many examples, contemporary examples in different countries where people started institutionalizing, they formed institutions with very good intentions. Later down the line, the institution itself became the goal, protecting it. Of course, I'm not saying you don't have to protect and preserve the institution. That's necessary, but this focus should always be there, and it also goes back to the arrangement of your institution. So there's a very interesting discussion, which I'm not going into it, where he says that Hezbollah chose a certain strategy. They set up their institution in a way that, on one hand, they could preserve the institution and strengthen it, and at the same time, not lose contact with the people, not become isolated, not become party-focused only. And there are very interesting ways of implementing that. You can refer to the book. And there you go. They sat down, they thought about it, they answered these difficult questions, they said, Bismillah, let's start. They started a huge number of institutions. Of course, at a gradual place. So I'm not going to read the whole list. So Sheikh Naeem Qasim, and this is that 11 things were done to institutionalize this movement. So that's what I'm trying to say, that leadership is not enough. Good people being there is not enough. You need to institutionalize it so that that thing. There are different things that they did. So for example, they started a recruitment process. They formed women's societies to do activities amongst the women. They lead there, and that's an interesting topic to study in itself, the women of Hezbollah, the role of women in Hezbollah, both on ground and in the institutions of Hezbollah. Where do they serve? Youth recruitment, Imam Mahdi scouts, educational, cultural, health, agriculture, construction. Basically, it's an empire, if you would like to call. They started creating different institutions, of course, in a balanced way, in a calculated way, and not in a way that would be too heavy. And there's a range of things they do here. Okay, so that was my third and fourth discussion, leadership and creating institutions. And without that, no Islamic movement can claim to be successful because you don't have the arms and means to do anything. Okay, so institutionalization is very important. And the last thing, in 4 minutes, inshallah, I'll mention that, okay, all of this is good. What have they achieved on ground? What does their movement look like? The social movement has to move something, right? You can't have a social movement that's static. It's not doing anything. No, it's a party doing things of their own. Right? It doesn't make sense. Because the ultimate goal of a social Islamic movement is to cause social change. And alhamdulillah, and again, as I say, this is remarkable, to say the least, what they've achieved in these 40 years. This is divided into three areas of what they've achieved. One is what they've achieved on the military front, very significant. Second, what they've achieved in the political front, because overt political activity is one of the things that Hezbollah does. And the third one is the social change, the actual change in the lives of the people that they've brought about. Okay, very, very briefly, the military achievements, again, I don't need to mention, you've all been, inshallah, you should follow the news. You know what happened, how they drew out the occupying forces, first from Beirut, then from Tyre, then from Sidon. They keep pushing them. And then 2000, they kicked them out of the entire Lebanon. And this is a big achievement. You have the war in 2006 and the current events. Current events are very significant. Hezbollah is fighting under a lot of pressure. Probably and certainly, we don't feel the loss of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah like the Lebanese feel. Right? Of course, we all felt the loss. I'm sure everybody felt the loss. But the relation that the Lebanese Shia and the Hezbollah had with Shahid Sayyid was, they were shattered, to say the least. They couldn't sleep at nights. They didn't know what to do. It's a big shock. But they've regained themselves and they're fighting. So basically, like, they're doing something that seems very difficult to do. Like, I mean, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah kind of had a very prominent place. They would listen to his speeches, that connection was there. So despite these big losses, they are doing their duty in the military part. I won't go into the details. The second one, again, where I won't go into the details, is the political side. So social movement, when it acquires a scale beyond a certain point, has no choice but to engage in political activity. Shias in Lebanon is not a small minority. They are a big portion of the Lebanese society. They're the single largest minority. Okay? And they are placed in a very complex society. There's Christians, there's Sunnis, there's Druze. There's a lot of external political forces vying for control of Lebanon. There's colonial baggage, there's French presence. Hezbollah has to enter the political arena dealing with these different groups. You have no choice. You have to have a political strategy, and that's what Hezbollah did, but after 1990s. So the first 10 years, their focus was on mukawama, on military resistance. 1990s, they said that, no, this is something that needs to be built. Again, this has a long story, and you can read that in book. Half of the book is about the political strategy and what Hezbollah has done in these years. But I just read one paragraph that tells us that political strategy is based on some decisions you make about how you're going to approach policy and what's your political philosophy in your context. And this was summarized by Sheikh Naeem Qasim in one paragraph. The party's approach to political work with national figures and societal powers was based on a practical methodology expressed as tolerance preferred to hostility. This is about internal Lebanese politics. Tolerance as opposed to hostility. The translation is not so good. Cooperation as opposed to contempt. The call to God as opposed to blasphemy, unity of powers as opposed to dispersion, and confronting occupation as more important than internal differences. So you see, they laid out an idea that, look, this is how we are approaching politics in Lebanon. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Hezbollah does a lot of regular political activity. It's a political party. They have MPs. They have a political wing. They have very good relationship with different groups, with a lot of achievements, but that's a different story. The last but not the least, 3 minutes, inshallah, and that is the social change they have caused in the Lebanese society. They have done a lot, to be honest. Okay, I'm just going to read them. First thing is that they started a lot of standard social services, providing social services to the Shias and anyone who's interested in benefiting. Okay, so this is also very interesting. They said that we're not going to differentiate based on sect when we offer our services. It's open to all. We are here to serve the Lebanese people. Okay. And again, I'm not reading. He mentions the importance of this, that for Hezbollah, so the political work started later. The social work started in 1984. 2 years down the line, they said that this was so important for us that we are not going to delay it, even though their focus was on the military resistance. So what did they do? They did a lot. For example, they started an organization called Jihad al-Bina, Reconstruction. So the Israelis would come, wreak havoc, destroy things, Hezbollah would go and rebuild it. They had a whole setup to do that. Interesting, from 1988 to 1991, the party worked to remove all waste accumulation in Beirut's southern suburbs. So basically, Hezbollah is doing waste collection. Right? Okay. Sometimes we don't have this idea about Hezbollah, but yes, they're doing this. And you know, the Beirut's southern suburbs are the Shia majority, right? The Dahia, which is being bombed, and even southern down, they're very poor areas. Like, these were literally the ghettos which slowly and gradually were socially transformed by Hezbollah. Again, it's not till equal to those very rich areas in Beirut, the northern areas. These are still the poorer sections. And they said that they did this. Hezbollah concerned itself with agricultural activities. Okay. So basically, they're talking about fertilizers and honey production, other kind of things. Why? People's economy, people's livelihood is important for them. Focusing on health, the party founded Islamic Health Organization. So you see, they're going in the wide range of areas. And the last one which I want to emphasize is that no Islamic social movement is truly an Islamic social movement without doing educational activities, having a system of education, of tarbiyah, of training people. Because ultimately that's the aim, right? You have a good economy so that you can be good servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You want good people to be trained in this society. You want people to get closer to Allah. That's the ultimate goal. Even the mukawama, the resistance, is so that you have security in your country so you can live your life as ordained by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this was something very important to them. So they have like subsidies for education, providing stationery, scholarships. There are numbers there. It's like 16,000 people, 5,000 students. And then Hezbollah decided to enter into forming their own schools. So they have two very important network of schools. One is called Al-Mahdi schools. One is called Al-Mustafa schools. They have two different network of schools where basically you have your own schools and you do your own things. You teach them the regular, secular subjects, which you have to do. And in addition to them, you give them Islamic training. You create that environment where people can benefit from there. And interestingly, Sheikh Naeem Qasim is one of the founders and one of the very, very influential personalities in Al-Mustafa schools. Okay, he's one of the leading figures there. And of course, one very interesting thing they did is the Al-Mahdi scouts. And again, each of these need to be studied. I said those 10 hours. You need to look at a lot of pictures and see what they're doing and everything. So Al-Mahdi Scouts is a regular scouts thing, right? You have this idea of scouts, you gather these youth, but it's very well designed to integrate Islamic elements, to teaching them our deen, to teaching them aqaid, to give them the right ideology, to give them the right akhlaq and the right. And from here, so they start at the age of 9 and they finish at the age of 18. And they have 3 to 4 levels. And after 18, now you're free. Many of the recruits that the Mukawama and Hezbollah gets is from this setup. Why? Because you're training, you're doing tarbiyah of these individuals. And I'll end with, again, as a side point, there's many other things Hezbollah is doing. I'm not saying this is the only thing. They have a whole women's wing, they do media work, they have an international departments. So they do a lot of things. It's a full-fledged social movement. But I'll end on this note that many, many years ago, I don't even remember how many years ago, with one of the scholars who was in Qom that time, I had an opportunity to meet the head of Al-Mahdi Scouts for the entire Lebanon. So they have a chapter here. So they have a chapter here in the school. They have a school here, I'm sure you're aware, and they have a chapter of Al-Mahdi Scouts. And they do the same thing, same pattern here. So the head of this entire network of Hezbollah, Al-Mahdi Scouts, was here in Qom, and there was someone who invited me that, okay, this person, do you want to come? I said, yeah, why not? And believe me, just meeting him was impressive. Like his personality, how he carried himself, how focused he was. And I still recall how passionately he was speaking about doing work for Imam-e-Zaman. Like that was like, I had never seen someone like this. Looked like a very ordinary man. Didn't have any very like a strong personality and like a very big beard. He had a very little beard. Like you have those people, right, who don't have. So, and very ordinary man, short height. But the personality was impressive. And that's why he was the head of the Al-Mahdi Scouts, a very, very important part of their setup. And you speak about different themes and same things that you need to institutionalize. We need to do work. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. Summarizing everything in few lines, what we spoke about was that Hezbollah is a social movement. Social movement is a complex phenomenon. It's not something that you can just say that, okay, you do these two, three activities and you're a social movement. It requires a base. There has to be something present in that society that someone can come and build a social movement. You can't build a social movement in vacuum. You need some capital, some human capital, some social capital, some intellectual capital to do that. So that base is one important part. It requires leadership. Someone needs to come out and say that, okay, I'm going to build this movement. How it's done is through institutions. But you have to be very careful that institutions don't turn into your idol. And then when you have something like this, with a lot of patience, with a lot of tawakkul, with a lot of bravery, you slowly and gradually start causing a social change. And the social change can be very wide, from providing security to the mu'mineen, to their economic upliftment, to the media work, to their tarbiyah, to their education, and you can keep adding to the list. So inshallah, we pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that firstly, he gives us the tawfiq to understand this prominent thing that we are seeing in our own lives. And inshallah, and then later, draw inspiration from what they have done. And inshallah, and we see in our own surroundings how we can benefit from their experience. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa sallallahu ala muhammadin wa alihi tahireen.